Okay, so for this next one, we have Kyle Kazan, CEO of Glasshouse, and Brett Novy, CEO of PharmaCann. So two companies that have been competing in challenging markets and with illicit sales as well. So I think it's going to be an interesting conversation. So before we start, I guess, could you just provide a brief overview of your company and your critical achievements in so far in 2023? And then maybe, Brett, you could start.
So just brief overview of PharmaCann. We are in 8 states. We're private. So we focus initially on the limited license markets east of the Mississippi. So we call it the I-80 corridor. Illinois anchors our footprint on the west side. And then, you know, we're in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Massachusetts, New York. And then we did an acquisition a few years ago of LiveWell. And LiveWell was the largest operator in Colorado and Michigan. So we added their 13-year expertise to our platform. That's been fully integrated. And that was our last two, the two states that took our 6-state footprint to 8 states. And our biggest accomplishment, you know, 2023 has been very challenging for us. New York has always been a huge part of our story and a huge part of the value proposition for our shareholders. We've been shepherding that state along, limping along through a very challenged medical market since 2016. And so we're just trying to basically get to go in New York for adult use sales. I think the market's going to go from $170 million medical market to what we think someday will be a $6 billion recreational market, and we plan to participate that and you know, compete for the number one market share in New York when it's all said and done. So.
That is impressive. our story is a little bit more simple than Brett's. We're in one state. It's California. We have purposely said we're going to just focus in on that state just because of its size and the appellation. And we figured if we could win there, we would be well positioned to compete great in a great way throughout the country. What it would tell you is Glasshouse Brands, we own the second largest greenhouse facility in America. We think it's in the best location to grow cannabis. We own 2 other farms that are just about an hour north in Santa Barbara, and we're vertically integrated. We have 10 stores. We have a top 3 flower brand in the state. We have a top 5 edible brand, and we have a couple of value brands that are doing really, really well. So, but the thing that we've been focused on, and our spokesmodel Graham Farrar is back there is our CFO, who is not texting now, thank you. But basically, our focus from day one has been COGS, COGS, COGS. And so we're growing in the low hundreds right now per pound. And we think that over time is a winner for us. And we love the quality, and we're super excited. The thing we did in 2023 that I would point that as a huge success, 2022, we raised some money, and it was a grinder out there. We're happy we got the raise done and actually over-raised. This year, the raise was like, I mean, I was on vacation in Tahiti, and it got filled up. I mean, it was, so I think part of that is the team at Glasshouse has done a great job at getting those COGS down, getting the consistency down, and we hit cash flow positive and pay our 280E. So we're super excited, and I'm sure you're going to ask about D.C., and I don't know what's going on over there, but maybe something.
No, that's great. And Kyle, you were a bit of a different MSO, I guess, or maybe not even MSO at this point because you are focused in California. So why is it that you have that focus, you know, thinking about how this market is going to evolve over the long term? Why is it that right now you're only in California?
So our vision was a little bit different. You know, we have a lot of friends that are in the MSOs, and you know, like what Brett's doing, we're super excited about. We just took a bit of a different path. We felt, hey, this is an agriculture product. We think agriculture products should be grown where agriculture products are grown. And California supplies, you know, more than 50% of ag that's eaten throughout the United States. So it's well suited to grow agriculture, and that's what cannabis is. So if we went to Nevada or Arizona, we've certainly had those opportunities, we'd have to vertically integrate in those states, and we just, you know, I can't think of my favorite Arizona wine or my favorite, you know, Nevada blueberries that I want to eat. So it was a pretty easy choice for us that this has just been our vision from day one, and that's why we call ourselves a super state operator.
And Brett, I guess just getting your perspective in terms of your current footprint, you know, why did you decide to have that footprint? And I think we talked a little bit about this before, you know, your initial idea in the industry and how has that evolved as the industry changed?
Sure. So when we got started, we started in Illinois with a lot of the other MSOs, and it was the first large medical market to take applications after Colorado had gone recreational. And I think that's why you see a lot of MSOs headquartered out of Illinois, out of Chicago. The strategy at the time, we were financial guys, like I was in financial services, and attorneys who wrote the apps. And our core competency, when we sat down and we said, hey, what's our strategy here, was we didn't know very much about cannabis at all. Like, we had consumed, obviously, we were passionate about the social justice, you know, and just the fact that the way that it was going to become legalized in our minds over time, but we had a lot to learn about how to grow high quality cannabis, and we knew that. So our strategy initially was, let's win licenses in limited license markets where there's a regulated oligopoly and we're protected from competitors like Kyle and folks from California, where if they came into Illinois day one, they would have crushed us. And so we executed on that strategy. We accumulated and aggregated our footprint, and then we sought out to partner, merge with companies like Kyle that could help bring that expertise around, hey, here's how you grow high-quality cannabis at scale. Here's how you introduce brands, good, better, best, in the cannabis market, right? Because at the end of the day, it is a commodity. I mean, Kyle's 100% right. But it's like it's a commodity. It's like water. You know, water is a commodity, but there's also brands within water. So we needed that expertise. We had to acquire it because we didn't have it. That was the LiveWell acquisition. And so LiveWell at the time, it was a complete operational takeover. Their team came into our facilities. They tripled our yields. They way improved the quality of our products, complete overhaul of our genetic library. And so, you know, and it also brought to us at the time, Michigan and Colorado were two of the top three regulated markets in size. You know, it was California, Michigan, Colorado. So and a deep presence in a highly competitive market. So kind of exactly what Kyle's doing in California, LiveWell was executing on in Colorado. And we also believe fundamentally that over time, all these markets would be full competition. All the markets eventually will look like California, will look like Colorado. And so the operators that know how to win in those markets are going to win everywhere throughout the country eventually. And so that was the thesis, and that's how we ended up with our current footprint.
So I guess just expanding on that, you know, being in some of these challenging markets, Colorado, Michigan, California, New York, how does that help you differentiate over the long run, you know, makes you a better company to compete once, you know, some regulatory developments happen and maybe interstate commerce, et cetera? So how does that make you a different company? Brett?
Yeah, it's exactly what Kyle said. Kyle could grow high-quality cannabis for $100 a pound. That's insane. You know, the best we do in our facilities is about 400-ish. But that's how you compete. Look, it's going to be a commoditized CPG-type market. There's going to be huge cyclical swings, peaks and troughs. We just went through a trough. We went through it in Colorado and Michigan. Kyle experienced it in California, and we're here at this conference today talking about the war. Not everybody's going to get through those cycles, And so having lived it, knowing how to get through it, you know, how to manage inventory, manage your working capital, manage your cash positions, that's what's going to be create long-term sustainable companies in this industry, in my opinion.
I would echo a lot of what Brett said. California has a – I would say California is the toughest market in the world. And the reason I say that is because it has an entrenched culture of original illicit players that's still the majority of the market. And so we're competing with that like no other state. And our feeling was – if you want to win the World Cup, you got to play World Cup teams. And so that's kind of how we felt. But I'll tell you, it was, and we're not through the gauntlet, but when the wholesale pricing of cannabis in California hit the floor, it was really brutal. And we had yet to turn on the big farm that we acquired. But we just kept focused in on one thing, and that's costs. Costs. And so we've been lasered there. And then ultimately, there was a washout. A lot of licenses went away, and the pricing came back. And so, you know, when I talk to my friends at the MSOs, they're like, you know, they call me up, and they know we're in the battle. And I said, look, if we can just sell our average selling price, which includes the trim, the smalls, and the big flower, if we could just do it at $300 a pound, it would be a dream. And usually it's like silence on the other side. They're like, holy shit. And I'm like, that's how crazy it is out here. And so, you know, stuff in New Jersey where, you know, $75 an eighth, you can get California 20 in California. So ultimately, I agree with Brett. The walls are all going to come down. And then it comes down to what kind of efficiencies do you have? And we look forward to that day. We don't see it as an if, it's a when. Please don't ask me when. I've been wrong every single time. But, you know, one of these days, even a stop clock is right twice a day. So one of these days I'll be right. But at the end of the day, we look forward to it, and we think that we've been training at altitude for a long time, so we're ready for a nationalized market.
So we don't know when. So maybe let's focus on California. What is it that you're seeing? You said that prices have recovered, but in terms of your expectations, do you think prices are going to continue to improve, or you see that cycle of, you know, excess supply coming back to the market?
You know, in any commodity, look at oil. You know, it goes up, it goes down. I think we're going to see those swings get a little bit less wild for a while, and then all of a sudden when legalization comes, it's hard for me to believe that we won't see an uptick for us. But in where we sit today, right now, the cultivators were getting hammered. That was the washout. Many did get washed out, didn't renew their licenses. You know, doing business in California, we always seem to be ranked somewhere around 50. It's not easy in a lot of ways. But right now that has moved. The taxing has moved to the retail. And we're estimating at least 25% of the retailers in the state of California are not paying their tax to the state of California. And so what happens? Does the state actually go in and shut those down when you know, and 65% of cities and counties in California have no legal stores. So it is, every day it's something new. And so if the other thing is on those distressed retail, they're not paying the brands. A lot of them aren't. And that's causing just a lot of pain throughout. Look, it's a new industry still. We still have a very robust legacy market or illicit market. And I think it's going to take a minute to work through. Happily, we think we're positioned. We're building out our next 1 million square feet. When we take that on, we think that scale will help take the cost down even further, which will give us a little bit of a bigger moat than we already have.
And Brett, when you look at New York, you have the new licensing rules out there for adult use. We were talking about this yesterday. So how do you see that market? What do you think of the rules, the special fee that you have to pay, and the competition with the illicit market here that's very strong?
Yeah, so lots to cover there and unpack. 900 days later, it feels like we finally have a set of rules to play by in New York. It's been very frustrating, very challenging. You know, from our perspective, though, there's been a weird demonizing of large operators in the space, but it's been discriminating against 95% of potential operators who want to enter the market, right? The way that the licenses have been issued thus far. That's all seemingly changing. The regs have been finalized. They should become effective hopefully soon. And there's a couple outside dates in the regs for the large legacy medical operators. The first date is December 30th. That's when we should get our first retail store. So that's big. That's huge. And then the next date is July 1st, 2024, and that's when we should get our next two licensed retail adult use stores. That's huge. The what's uncertain on the timing is our ability to participate in the wholesale market. So that's a little foggy still, but we think that that's all sort of coalescing around a November 1st start date for us to finally enter the market in New York from a wholesale perspective as well. That's the big long-term opportunity for us, wholesale in New York, because we're only going to have three retail stores. We think we'll have three great retail stores, but the long-term sort of value prop to our shareholders is wholesale. We need more retail license shops to open. So you talk about, everybody says the illicit market in New York. To me, it's just the unlicensed market, because there's stores open all over the place that are operating without licenses. That's the difference between what we're intending on doing starting December 30th and what a lot of these stores are currently doing in the market today. All that needs to happen is those stores get licensed and those stores abide by the same regulations as everybody else. And if they don't, there's a structure in place for the state to deal with that. You know, violation of... So it's very unique in the sense that the demand is there, the retail footprint is really there, the infrastructure is really there. It's just turning it on, and then it's turning it on in a way and having a mechanism such that if people don't follow the rules, there's consequences to that, just like any other industry, right? So I really do think I really am very, very optimistic that when this application comes out October 4th, that's supposed to include everybody else, finally, that you will see the market really start to ramp up, and that within the next 12 months, you'll have what has been, in my estimation, not a very good rollout of an adult use market structure look normal, you know, look like any other state. So
just to follow up there, would you expect, so you have the 10, I guess, ROs, registered organizations, and PharmaCann is one of them already in the state. So would you expect a lot of the other MSOs that are not here yet to apply for a license as well?
That is the interesting question. So New York came about, you know, PharmaCann was always, we've been competing for the number one market share, but PharmaCann and Curaleaf. And the medical market historically, right? There's a lot of really good operators in New York as well, you know, GTI, Cresco, et cetera, and they're all going to do great here. I feel like for PharmaCann, New York was such a major focus. Our facility expansion's done. Our first harvest out of our expanded facilities, we're at our cap with respect to canopy. You know, we're taking down our first harvest from those highly sophisticated indoor grows in the next 4 weeks. Everybody else has sort of been waiting and watching and seeing. And so they're an 18-month expansion, you know, and then 16-week grow cycle behind us that's going to give us a really solid head start with respect to the wholesale market. And so that's why, from our perspective, we want to get going as fast as possible. I think a lot of the other ROs, everybody's in their own unique position, right? There's a huge fee that comes with the privilege of being vertical in New York. It's $20 million. Now, it's paid out in kind of chunked out in tranches, but some people might do the math and say, hey, we don't think that that's going to IRR for us. We don't think that's going to return, create a return having to pay that fee to be vertical. So we're going to do wholesale only, right? We are going to be vertical. We've done the models. We've done the math. We think that that $20 million fee will pay off. But, you know, everyone is in their own unique position. I can't speak for the other companies. I think that the one company that's most similar to us, though, would be Curaleaf.
Okay. Kyle, what trends are you seeing in California in terms of licensing the retail stores? So you just mentioned that many of them are not paying their taxes. So what do you think can happen there, as well as in terms of the canopy, the cultivation in the state?
So Fred, what I would tell you is California's interesting. When a city embraces cannabis, they embrace it, like, ridiculously. So what I mean by that is 35% of the cities and counties have some legalization. The city where we're headquartered, Long Beach, has, like, 30 stores, and they're going to add 8 more. When you have that kind of concentration, you don't have any real bangers. And so everybody sort of struggles along. And then a neighboring city, like we're in Santa Ana, which was the only city in Orange County. There's like 20 stores. We're one of them. Couple do well. We do okay. And then Costa Mesa is opening, and they're opening like 20 stores. And most of you guys probably don't know those cities, but they put out like a longtime gun store. They put out a donut shop that had done really well. And there was this mad rush. Ultimately, Costa Mesa needs 1 or 2 stores, and that's before 7-Eleven eventually gets into the game. Long Beach probably needs 4 stores, not 38. So I think what's happening now is you're starting to see those stores that have too high of leases, they have too much debt, they're not paying their taxes. Eventually we're going to see a washout there too. And hopefully there's discussions of trying to push the rest of the 65% of the state to start accepting stores. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous how few stores we do have. So that's what I'm seeing. I'm not bullish long-term on retail. I do think that there's some established retailers that know how to sell tobacco and alcohol just fine. They're well-trusted by the states, the counties, and the cities, and eventually they will penetrate this market too. So we're sort of sticking towards our 10 stores, and we're doing management and, you know, talking about management for other stores. We think with our pricing power, you know, I see Matt with Harborside. He knows how to, like, grow cheaply, and he can put it in the stores. He has a competitive advantage. We do as well. So I think we that are vertically integrated can help shrink the store count where it's just over-concentrated, and then you'll start having stores do much better.
So when you think about the illicit market in those two states, New York and California, and I guess the licensing there, the different structures, what are some of the learnings that you think emerge from those two states? And I guess when you look at the illicit market, how do you compete? Is it really all about price? Is it about distribution? What are the key factors? And Brad, maybe you can start with this one.
So I think the biggest thing is it would be great if these states would kind of learn from each other and how to create markets that are fully functioning and quickly and generating tax revenues and, you know, regulating product, all that, which is their intention, but it just, in New York especially, that it has not worked that way for the first 900 days. But what I will say with respect to competing with the illicit product, with the, you know, the unlicensed, unregulated market is, yeah, like, there's a lot of good product from places like California that are in New York right now that we're competing with, and we will be competing with. And so it really comes down to the state's willingness to sort of level that playing field. You know, the state needs to decide that they want to support local state licensed operators. And if they do that, the market will function. If they don't, you know, yeah, there's going to be an influx of product from outside the state that we're going to have to compete with. And guess what? Like, there's going to be a heavy tax associated with buying regulated, tested product, right? So in my estimation, it really just comes down to the state's desire to kind of regulate the program.
I think Brett hit the nail on the head. I would say for New York, the cautionary tale should be the city of Los Angeles. City of Los Angeles, you know, the virtue signal at the government level about social equity. We're issuing all these social equity licenses. And they did. And I've had many in my office, and they want to open up. But the problem is they also don't put out the illicit market. And so one of our toughest performing stores is the Pottery, kind of in central Los Angeles. Good location, parking, everything that you'd want. And there's 10 illicit stores around us. There's illegal deliveries. And the city has shown absolutely no will. I've talked to people at the highest levels. And I'm like, you know, it's bullshit what you're doing to the social equity folks. It's better to have just not given them a license and given them false hope and a head fake. And so if the city of New York and Mayor Adams, they don't get serious, the New York operators, you know, like Brett and Boris, they're all going to feel what we feel in the city of L.A. Our cheapest prices by far are our L.A. store. We're like 40% cheaper there than a lot of our other stores. And if we don't do that, we can't really compete because we pay taxes. Our products are tested. All of our employees, they make at least the city minimum wage, if not more. You know, all the things that we have to do as a regulated company that the folks down the store don't need. The parent company supported a social equity licensee over by the LA Coliseum and USC. And I told the woman, I said, I can't support you. When I saw they did, I was one of her first customers. I showed up at the store, and like a block away was somebody selling cannabis on a card table. I'm like, it's really hard to compete with a food truck when you are paying rent and everything else. And so I'm hoping that the city of New York wakes up pretty quickly, because I'd hate to see what happened in LA happened here.
So Kyle, you said that I guess your view is that cannabis is a commodity. What is the power of brands right now, and how do you think that's going to evolve?
So California is, you know, a great place. If people are saying, what do I think cannabis throughout the country, and as Brett described, what do I think it's going to look like? You know, we have 10 stores. I think we sell about 25% of the product of those stores are ours that sell at the end of the day. 75% of the product are other people's products. And if we don't do that, people will not go to our store. You cannot just Trader Joe model your stores in California. There are popular brands out there that if you don't carry, consumers will go other places for selection. And so, you know, that's how it's always been for us. So to us, it's not different. When we go to some of our friends' stores here or in other states, it's pretty much their own selection. That's not the future. I can't think of any other industry that has that word, you know, except Trader Joe's.
Brett, what's your view?
I agree with everything Kyle just said. It's great when you're selling your own products or your own retail stores and realizing that full margin. That's unbelievable. But we're a little bit higher percentage. I think that we're in the low 40s, but you know, over 60% of our shelves are third party products. And I agree. You know, menus drive traffic. People will drive past the store, you know, and drive an extra 10 miles for the product they want. And you better have it on your shelves. Otherwise, they're not going to buy that product at your store, and they're not going to buy whatever, you know, they would stop at the closer location. So,
we talked about New York, and you mentioned Michigan and Colorado, Brett. So what other markets are you excited about? I know that you have a presence also in Maryland, which just turned adult use. So, what can you tell us about other markets that you're in?
The other markets that we're in, we're really excited about Ohio. That should go adult use mid next year. That'll be a good market. We're very excited about Pennsylvania. We're doing well in Pennsylvania, and that should go recreational in 2025. And then I think what you'll see from us, from PharmaCann, is you'll see us having a really good narrative, basically paying off New York to our investors. I'm very excited to do that. You'll see us pay off on New York. You'll see us pay off on our initial strategy, which was limited licenses in these medical markets when Ohio and Pennsylvania transition. You'll see us top up where we're below the license caps in state like Illinois. We have 8 stores. You could have 10. That's going to be our focus for the next 12 months. We've identified 7 states that we like to expand into. New Jersey's great. Florida's great. California. You know, brands are built in California, New York, Miami, New York, and Florida. And so we just feel strongly that those are going to be big, important markets for us long term. But we're not, you know, we're not trying to take over the world. We just have a very prescriptive plan for the next 12 months, 24 months, 36 months. And, you know, obviously 36 months in cannabis is like 20 years. So a lot could change between now and then, but that's just how we're thinking about it. Nothing more important for PharmaCann than the state right here.
And to Brett's point, he's only 22 years old.
So, Kyle, would you consider expanding to other markets outside of California?
You know, as a fiduciary, I always consider, but that has never been part of our plan. You know, we've listened to that. I think federal legalization is sooner than later. I mean, rescheduling, I think, is going to happen next year. And it wouldn't surprise me to see some interstate packs where we could sell our products to New Jersey and, you know, between the two governors that, you know, Murphy and Newsom, I think they're talking right now. And so that kind of expansion we would absolutely consider. But as far as just becoming an MSO, I think I would be shocked if that's a direction we went in, given the fact that we haven't done it thus far.
Okay. Thinking about balance sheets and capital allocation here, how comfortable are you with your balance sheet, your liquidity, and in terms of the capital allocation priorities for the remainder of this year and 2024 as well? Can you talk about that, Kyle?
Yeah, that's something that we think about all the time. Money is not cheap in this space. Money is not cheap right now anywhere in the United States for any industry, and it's you know, add plus 3, plus 5, whatever you want for cannabis. I would tell you that the reason we raised money this year was to turn on the next 1 million square feet. We think from as long as we continue to execute that we should be able to self-fund the next 3 million square feet on that facility to retrofit. You know, we pay our 280E, which is painful every single year. And, you know, we own some really good assets that are LTV just on 3 assets for the entire debt we have in the company of $50 million is, I don't know, 20, 25%, something like that. So I feel really comfortable with our balance sheet. You know, we've decided to apply for ERTC, so we'll see if, you know, what happens there. Yeah, overall, that's the one thing that's one of the things that I'm very happy about with Glass House Brands, that we've been very cautious about not doing bad deals, overspending, things like that, and just being quick but not hurrying.
Brett?
And look, a true testament to Kyle as well, because there's lots of pressure in this industry historically to, you know, there's been a couple waves of, you know, FOMO, for lack of a better way to say it, to do deals that might not have made sense in hindsight, but at the time there's a lot of pressure to do them. And we've been under that pressure as well. And similar to Kyle, we stuck to our strategies. And so our balance sheet, it's a high growth, capital intensive industry, right? And our balance sheet reflects a company that has been shepherding their number one asset, limping along the way for 9 years. But we're here, and that's about to change materially. We've been fully costed in 8 markets for a decade. And without the benefit of those markets transitioning from medical to recreational. And we've positioned ourselves right on the precipice for when sixth of the 8th state transitions, everything's going to change materially. That payoff's about to happen. We've been fortunate in that
the two investors that provided the initial seed capital to PharmaCann have supported the company in every fundraise along the way, and will continue to do so, quite honestly, until their initial thesis plays out, which will be in the next 18 months, I think, with New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania. So that's why we're still private, because you know the support of those two high net worth individuals has been a blessing for us.
So we have 5 minutes, so a last question here. How should investors think about PharmaCann in terms of how are you different from other MSOs, and you know, some of the key catalysts that you see happening near term?
I think there's a small number of companies like Kyle's and ours. So PharmaCann, we are all the same everywhere. We're standardized across all 8 states. A lot of companies can't say that because they grew very quickly through M&A, and their SOPs, the way they grow, their facility, everything's different every single state. We are not that. You know, we're managed through, we have a business intelligence platform that we use that's standardized, where we manage our whole business seed to sale all the way through retail, wholesale, through KPIs. We look at margins, we look at profit dollars, we look at revenues, we look at everything. We look at yields, we look at THC percentages, we look at genetics, we look at our limited production lungs, like in real time on a phone, on a computer. And we are, I believe, and not because of me or PharmaCann, because of LiveWell and John Lord and his team, we are one of the best operators in the industry, right? We can compete. We could sell $35 ounces to survive a cyclical trough, and we could come out the other side, and we could take $35 ounces to $100 ounces in Colorado in 6 months as the market swings back. Not a lot of companies can do that. You know, Kyle's in a similar situation. So I think what's going to happen to me is the world's going to realize that, the importance of the ability to. It's easy to overpay in a market where there's limited license and everybody's making a ton of EBITDA and free cash flow. But what happens when those regulated oligopolies, the walls fall down, and all of a sudden everybody has to compete? Well, you better be really, really freaking good at operating. And that's what we did the last 2 years. So,
thank you. Kyle, why is it – so the same question for you. Why is it that you are the lowest cost operator in California?
Well, I echo a lot of what Brett just said, but about kind of what it's going to take to win – we've looked at things differently. You know, when we'd go to Toronto, we'd come to New York, and we're sitting with the MSOs. They're playing a game against each other. We looked at it more like Moneyball, in that we were measuring things differently and thinking about the world when the walls are gone and what it would take to win there. And so, and the only reason we're public, because we liked being private, it was the acquisition of that huge farm that we thought was the game changer and the unicorn in the industry, which we didn't have the money any other way but going public. So I would tell you that I think that our cost advantage and our appellation of California is huge. I think our biggest threat would be just execution. And I made a joke about Graham, but he is as good as anybody that I've ever met in any business. And when it comes to growing cannabis, he's freaking a rock star. And so I like our positioning. He and I founded the company. Neither of us have sold one share of stock. I just invested a lot of money in the last round. I believe in what we're doing, and I think that we're very, very well positioned for, you know, even if the walls come down incrementally, it'll help us along the way. And when they fully come down, it'll be a great day.
Thank you. We're right on time. Thank you, Brett. Thank you, Kyle.
Thanks, Brett.